Okay, now we are going to start our regular programming now because we have a lot of the technical issues ironed out. Brian Cannons, Director of Roads and Transportation with Donegal County Council, is with us now. Good morning to you, Brian. Hopefully you can hear me okay.
Yeah, good morning, Greg, to you and to your listeners.
Right, okay. I think it was clear, wasn't it, in the days leading up to yesterday that this was going to be a proper storm, a proper sort of red alert, and it turned out that way, didn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely, Greg. And one thing in particular, too, is that even in advance of the red warning coming into effect at 9 p.m. yesterday evening, there was still a large impact right across the county, both from a surface water flooding perspective earlier in the afternoon and then right through to quite a lot of trees down in the period from 6 o'clock right through to 9 o'clock yesterday evening.
And what exactly, I mean, how extensive is the damage? Is it easy to say?
Right across the county, Greg. I've lost track of the number of map alerter notices we've issued in relation to trees down. It was 38 about an hour ago. It's probably over 50 now at this stage. And that's the ones that notifications go out on. I'm sure there's plenty of back roads that still have trees on them that we haven't got to or haven't been informed yet by the locals. But right across the road network, but some of it was dealt with yesterday afternoon or yesterday evening in advance of the red alert coming into effect. At that point, our crews would have went back home because it just wasn't safe to be out during the red alert, and then they remobilised again this morning and have cleared quite a lot of the main and priority routes and are working their way down through the other roads in order to make them passable. But right across the network, right across from Inishowen down to South Donegal, out to West Donegal, down the Finn and Deal Valleys and in and around Letterkenny in particular.
Yeah, indeed. And of course, the work of your team's complicated by the fact that sometimes there could be power lines involved or what have you. So having to liaise, I presume, quite a bit with the ESB, etc.
Absolutely. And we know that their teams have been out on the ground from early as well and working with our crews generally on a priority basis. And that's one of the, I suppose, the real hazards when it comes to storm recovery, and in particular, why it isn't really safe to be out through the hours of darkness unless there's a threat to life in relation to an issue, because you never know when you're approaching a tree if there's a power line entangled in that tree, and it really presents a real hazard to life, both of workers or a member of the public. So we would advise members of the public just not to try and take these jobs on themselves, just in case of the hidden hazards out there, and let the council and the ESB crews, etc., to clear these issues.
Yeah, because as far as I'm aware at this point, we seem to have avoided serious injury in the northwest, certainly in Donegal, and we just want it to remain that way, don't we, Brian?
Absolutely. Unfortunately, we're hearing of some tragic incidents further down the country, but in Donegal, we've been lucky, touch wood. But one of the things, I suppose, Greg, for your listeners, is that we've got further yellow wind warnings, one in effect today from up until 7 p.m. and then tomorrow from noon right through until 5 a.m. on Wednesday morning is a further yellow wind warning. And I know we tend to seem to get yellow warnings on a very, very regular basis, but in particular after this storm, there may be trees that may not have fallen during this event, but may well be lutent as part of it, and it might just take this yellow wind warning. So again, we'll be on standby for further trees to come down over the coming days, and again, just for householders, I suppose, and looking around their own properties, and farmers and other landowners on their properties where there may be trees adjoining the road network, is to take a look around, check if there is any noticeable damage, any noticeable change in those locations, and maybe some action now might prevent a tragedy down the line.
Yeah, a really important point you make there, Brian, because of course, even just a subtle change in wind direction could be enough to dislodge something that's just hanging there by the edge of its roots. So, Brian, just to recap then, teams have been out as soon as it was safe to do so. Everyone has a different definition, I suppose, of main roads and what have you. But as best as we can determine this, Brian, the main roads or the main routes, I think that's how you described them, are clear, work ongoing to clear up and tidy up and make safe other stuff around the region.
Yeah, the main routes was route that was trees down across our national primary and our national secondary network. Generally, they have been removed and roads would be open. The largest ongoing impact that I'm seeing at the moment is the Remelton Road out of Letterkenny, past Arena 7, heading towards Tara Court direction. There was multiple trees down just on that stretch of road. There's diversions in place since yesterday evening, and it's likely that road will remain closed into the afternoon, into after 2 p.m. at least. We've got Aircom and the ESB lines as part of that, and we know we've got their crews responding to assist in getting them obstacles moved.
Look, this is a once-off, but I suppose we have to prepare for once-off. Is there any argument at all, Brian, or maybe this is not really in your remit, that maybe to do an audit of what's along our roads, whether that's the responsibility of landowners or the council? As I say, it's not about attributing blame or anything like that, Brian, but I just wonder if the various agencies, be it ESB, Aircom, anyone that's sort of involved in this side of things, if we need to be working a bit closer together to see if we need to be preemptive in terms of taking trees down.
Yeah, it's a good point, Greg, and I suppose from every incident, one of the most important parts is what is the learning to take from it, and then whether that indicates there are preventative actions going forward. When it comes to trees along the roadside in particular, the department has published a guidance note for landowners about checking their trees on a regular basis, because trees can change. They can be impacted by storms, but also they can be impacted by disease, etc. And landowners with trees along the public road should be checking them maybe once or twice a year just for any noticeable change. And I suppose that's one of the points, but in relation to liaison with other of our colleagues in the utilities, etc., it's a valid point. Unfortunately, I suppose the alongside roads tend to be corridors for services as well, and the, when the two intermingle with the trees, it might be part of the hedgerow, etc. It can lead to issues like this, but it's definitely a good point well made, Greg.
All right, Brian, listen, thanks very much for your time. I do appreciate it, and hopefully all your crews, they're out there doing brilliant work, and I'm sure they'll all return home safely, given the training and skill sets they have, but we wish them well nonetheless. And again, a big shout out to the ESB crews out there as well. Anyone involved in getting our infrastructure back up and running, of course, we ourselves have had issues with transmission masts and power, and we've got people working to keep us on air, and we appreciate them doing so. But also, as I say, there's an awful lot of stuff to be fixed over a period of time. I'm just going to give you the Vision Ireland Radio Bingo numbers. We're catching up a little bit. I know this is not the most important thing, but it is quite important to some people out there. So just to give you the Vision Ireland Radio Bingo numbers, we're playing on a green-coloured sheet. The reference number is S16, and it's game number 4. The numbers are 7, 51, 81, 27, 19, 15, 55, 41, 45 and 73. I'll give you those number again in a moment. If you wish to claim for today's prize, leave your name and contact number before 8 p.m. this evening. We'll call you back the next working day. You call us on 07491 25000. So those numbers once again. I'm being a DJ today. I'm doing the bingo. It's all hands on decks, folks. 7, 51, 81, 27, 19, 15, 55, 41, 45 and 73. So good luck if you're playing the bingo today and supporting Vision Ireland in the process. Okay, you are tuned to the 9 till noon show. It is a little bit up in the air at the moment as we get everything sorted here. Everyone affected, as I mentioned a little earlier on, by the storms. A thank you coming in from a listener. I'm from Killay. I was walking across the road in the bad weather. I was going to the chapel. A lovely young man helped me cross the road. There was a group of about six of them, and they were just so lovely. It made my day. They told me that if it was their own granny, that they'd want someone to help her. It just melted my heart. I'm an older lady, and it made me feel less alone. I'd just like you to highlight this and say a big thank you to those boys. People always give out about the young people, but there are still good ones out there, no doubt about it. So, all right, let's go to Aaron Quinn. Good morning, Aaron.
Hi. Hi, Gray. How are you?
I'm okay. You are in Edinburgh, and you were called top travelling in this storm. So tell us, where did you leave from, what time, and then what happened to you?
Yeah, so the story is we left Cyprus, just a few of my friends. We had a flight booked for 12:30, so we were in the plane by 12:30 in Cyprus time. It'd be 10 a.m. in Irish time. But we took off anyway. There was no problem. But then it was just an hour left into the flight. A few of us started to notice that we were kind of going the wrong way, but there was nothing said yet. But then I think it was a wee bit before we made a descent anyway, that we were told that we would not be landing into Dublin, we'd be landing into Edinburgh for the night.
Mm-hmm. And what was the flight itself like? Was it disruptive? Was it okay? Was it, you know, could you get a sense of the weather?
Yeah, it wasn't great. No, it wasn't great now. We had a very, very rocky landing. I just want to say well done to the pilot for that, because it was a very, very shaky landing. But we got down no problem. But the problem wasn't getting down. It was getting out of the plane.
How long were we on board for?
We were on board since... we landed at 5 and we didn't get out the plane till before 8:00.
My word, that's a long sit.
Was food
and water okay, or what was the story there?
No, you still had to pay for food. After 2 hours anyway, they started to hand out limited water bottles.
Right, for free. And what about getting home? Now, what's the story?
So the story is now that, they've issued you with flights anyway.
Mm-hmm.
There's a flight for this evening, but there was three of my friends who wanted to get an earlier flight, but the flight was for 9:30.
Yeah.
But they didn't get their flight now till 10:30 because there was no crew and no pilot for the flight.
My word. Okay.
Yeah. Right, they issued us with flights for this evening, but for accommodation, it was a free-for-all.
All right, okay. Listen, hopefully you get home safe, Aaron. Listen, thank you very much for your time. We're going now to Siobhan Wynne, or Wynne. I beg your pardon, Siobhan, if I've got your surname incorrect. Regional Manager with Central Region at ESB Networks. Good morning to you. How are you keeping?
Good morning. We're good, thank you.
I'm looking here at the map of Ireland, and I can't recall ever seeing so many outages that you and your crews are having to deal with. What is the situation, I suppose, nationwide, Siobhan, at this point?
So the situation at the moment is that we have just over 190,000 customers without power. The west, the northwest, obviously have been the worst affected. So that's mainly Donegal, Sligo, Roscommon, Galway. And parts of South Kerry have been affected. But as you said, the whole country has been impacted by this storm. So we have power outages across the country at this stage.
Yeah, and when you look at map of Donegal and you sort of know the areas that aren't populated, pretty much there seems to be faults in everywhere. There is a population.
There is, yes. So, yes, all parts, particularly now of Donegal, have been impacted by the storm. We do have crews out, though, so... With crews out since first light this morning, they're out assessing the damage on the ground and they're making safe any emergency or safety issues on site. And as the day progresses, then we'll be restoring power to as many people as we can over the course of the day. So we would say just to your customers, because I know people are now out and about this morning, you know, if you're out walking or you come across a line on the ground or a conductor, just, you know, as usual, make sure that you stay well clear. But please contact us and register the fault on our powercheck.ie site. Or alternatively, if it's an emergency and you think there's a danger there, please call us on our emergency number at 1-800-372-999.
And in terms of getting the network back up and running, is it being out in the ground? Is there some sort of, you know, networking rerouting that can be done as well to try and fix issues? Or are the problems so extensive with the actual infrastructure that that's more complicated?
It's a combination of both. So, yes, the first point of call is to resectionalise the network and to feed, if we can, in an alternative arrangement. So that's what we do, first of all, and we can do that from our control centre. But then in addition to that, then, as we've been out this morning assessing the damage, there is quite extensive damage to the network. So there are cases when you just can't do that. We have a large number of poles now, broken poles on the network and trees on our lines. So there will be, you know, a large restoration effort and repair effort required.
Have we seen anything of this scale in recent memory?
Not in the last, I suppose, year or two. Yeah. Like, I suppose everybody remembers Storm Orphelia and Storm Darwin. They're a number of years ago at this stage. So, yeah, this is the most significant storm that we would have had in recent memory.
And in terms of the manpower, in inverted commas, how many teams, men and women, I'm sure, do you have out in Donegal? I mean, you could never have enough staff, could you, on standby to be able to send them out to so many different places?
No, so well, we have everybody out on site this morning. So all of our network technicians have been deployed across the country. Now, in addition to that, we do have access to contracting resources with our partners. So we've called them in also, and they've been deployed to the worst affected areas. So primarily they've been deployed to the northwest to assist with the effort there.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously everyone wants to know, and I think you sort of put out a blanket 6 p.m. Monday on the PowerCheck website, which I would say had enormous traffic over the last while. Is there any sort of hope as to when you'll have the majority back with power?
I would say, like, overnight we had 230,000 customers without power, so like that is a really significant number of customers. So realistically, we are looking at a multi-day event here. We will obviously try to get as many people back tonight, but inevitably there will be customers out without power tomorrow and possibly for another day after that again.
All right, OK. Well, listen, hopefully everyone stays safe out there. Do not approach any fallen electricity infrastructure, or don't believe it to be a telephone line or whatever you call the ESB. That's the tip. That's the advice you want to give people.
Absolutely. Listen, that's the most important point. And powercheck.ie is kept constantly up to date. So if you're looking for updates there, that's the best place to go.
OK, listen, thank you very much for your time. I know you're all very busy. Right, we're going to take a very short break and we'll be back with our next guest just after these. We'll have a full news update for you at 11 o'clock and the obituary notices as well. So stay tuned for that. Clodagh's with me now. Clodagh, sorry for holding you there. Good morning to you.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing okay. You're living at the mountaintop here in Letterkenny, and a real sense of a lucky escape through the storms last night.
Absolutely, yeah. We had a 90-foot tree come down through the garage last night and destroy it. Yeah, so feel very lucky that nobody was in the garage at the time. So, yeah, absolutely.
And this is a garage attached to a house. It's like a private garage, isn't it, Clodagh?
It's just behind the house, behind the house. Yeah, yeah.
What did you hear as it was happening?
Nothing. We didn't actually hear it. Thanks to double glazing, we were actually just getting into our bed. One of the kids was quite upset with the wind and everything, and we were just getting into bed. And our neighbour, who has CCTV, rang us and said, "Your tree is down." And we ran out, and yeah, surely the tree had come down through the garage and trampoline and everything is destroyed. But like I say, look, at least nobody has been hurt, and that's the main thing.
Yeah, indeed. But still, in the back of your head, you're like, well, thank God. It could have been very, very different.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I suppose the thing is that we've moved here 3 years ago, and we have three very big trees at the back of the house here. And at the last storm, one of them came down, just narrowly missed the ESB line when it did. And we called out the ESB at the time and said, look, this is an accident waiting to happen. There's two more trees here which are going to come down in the next storm. And we had them out three different occasions and they refused to do anything about it. And now the line is down, the fibre is gone, and our garage is gone. So
we're just looking at the picture you sent in here too. It's a significant garage. It's hard sometimes imagine it, but that could be a granny flat type of a building as well. It's a significant part of the building. Those trees, that tree that came down, I think they're quite narrow rooted as well, low rooted. It's almost sometimes a case of and you related this, it's when they come down, not if they come down.
Exactly. And we knew that once one of them had come down, the other ones had come down, and our neighbours had even said to us themselves, they've been watching those trees for the last 20 years waiting for them to come down. So, you know, I think this firefighting that the ESB are doing is really not, you know, we need to be kind of looking at things that are a risk and dealing with them before things happen and not after things happen, you know.
Yeah, I think so. Listen, it's one of those, thankfully no one was injured, but it's a nightmare for you because you're going to have to deal with
nightmare.
All right, Claudia, listen, thanks for joining us, and I'm sorry about that.
No worries.
Take care of yourself. 086 60 25000. Keep us updated. Declan, Jay Cassidy's with me now. Declan, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm all right. You're another person affected by the storm through international travel. What's your situation?
Well, we were coming back from a funeral in Manchester yesterday. So our flight was due to take off around 1:30, and we had seen that there was a storm, obviously, and we saw a lot of flights cancelled. But our flight got the green light to go ahead. The first thing was we were an hour and a half before late taking off, and we had a gate change, and it was an Irish flight, so we had one guy playing the Que Sera Sera on the mouth organ, you know, so I think that set the tone for the passengers.
I'm not sure,
you know,
I'd be a big fan of that, but anyway, it seems to always happen when we're flying places.
Yeah, well, at least it wasn't nearer my God to thee, you know. But so we got into the air about an hour and a half late, and then it wasn't so bad coming across because, you know, we would have been above it, I suppose. Mm. But as soon as we started to descend into Dublin, things got very ropey. I remembered having travel sickness in cars when I was a little kid, and I'd forgotten about it, and it all suddenly came back for the first time after many, many flights. You know, it was really, really bumpy, and we could also see other planes. We went into a holding pattern, so we were up there for a long, long time, and we could see other planes outside. And then when we got a glimpse of the Irish Sea, I'd never seen anything like it. It was really, really ripped up, you know. So finally, then we came in on final approach, and the plane was going from side to side and into air pockets and up and down. And just as we lined up to the airport and everyone holding their breath, the pilot just aborted and went back up again. So we were told then we were heading back to Manchester because nothing was available in Ireland. And then we were told that Manchester was full with diverted aircraft. So we were going to East Midlands, and a big groan went up. And then we were told, no, East Midlands can't take us either, so we're going to Paris. And a big cheer went up. I think people were thinking, to get to the wine, you know. So we landed actually in Beauvais, and I was up getting the coat ready to get off, but nothing was happening. And then it turned out that the pilot was waiting to see whether we could fly back to Dublin and have another go at landing. Mm. So we ended up for 5 hours on the tarmac in Paris. People were told they could get off if they wanted to, and three people did. And then we were told that there were no more flights out of Paris until next Wednesday.
Yes.
So if you did get off, you were under your own steam. So everyone just sat in. I think people were surprisingly good natured about it, and the crew were incredible because they've been gone since very early, but we were waiting for a time slot and waiting for updates and that, and there was one poor couple who had a child who was running out of formula, you know. So it was really, I think, particularly tough on the little ones. But then finally we took off again, and it was a very somber flight back toward, because we'd been all on our phones and being told, look, stay where you are. It's getting worse, if anything, in Dublin. But I suppose the first bit of positive news came when on the way over, the pilot said the wind had shifted direction. So he felt we'd a better chance. But we were told that if we didn't make the landing in Dublin, the only other alternative at that stage was Cologne in Germany. So on final approach, again, it was really, really rough. But the sea looked less chopped up. And then it was quite funny as we came in and people suddenly went, go on. And then everyone kind of started. So the pilot was getting this, go on, you know. And as we saw the runway lights and then we got down. And it was probably the dodgiest landing I've ever experienced, but it was probably my favourite because it got us down.
Touchdown, you know? And the fellow with the mouth organ at that point, he was still going, was he, or did he retire at that point?
Well, yeah, I think there was a general chorus at the end, but we were 11 hours really from the moment we boarded the plane. We were 11
hours. And do you
think
the three got off in Paris because they said, I just can't, I'm not flying? You know what I mean? Do you think they got off out of fear?
I imagine so, because you know, we were 5 hours on the tarmac, but I think the reason that people were not too agitated about not going is because the thought of going back into what we'd been through was you know, not pleasant.
Oh, scary stuff.
You're kind of torn between getting up and being stuck in France or staying with it and going through that again, you know. So you know, you're trying to decide the lesser of two evils.
Well, but, back on terra firma, Declan, we're glad you're home safe anyway. But
thanks a million.
It's amazing stuff. All right, thanks so very much indeed. That's Declan Cassidy there with his experience. Okay, Patsy McGonigal joins us now of the Finn Valley Centre. Patsy, are you there? Sorry for holding you. Good morning to you.
No bother, Greg.
Right, okay. Exactly, it's a bit calmer now. Yesterday evening... It became clear that there was some structural damage to the Finn Valley Centre. What was the situation?
The situation is that around 9 o'clock, we began to get called. We had closed early, obviously, you know, because of the conditions. And basically at 9 o'clock, you know, the roof, portions of the roof were on the move. So there was a danger to traffic, there was a danger to people. You know, that kind of sheeting that's on part of our new build would be seriously. And there's two roads running in there into the junction, you know. So that was our concern. So we got the guards on the case to try and get the road closed. So basically we lost a bit of the roof there at that end. And interesting as well, Greg. You know, the ferocity of the bloody one was that you know, AstroTurf, which would have a heavy covering of stuff, you know, to keep it down. Obviously, it was on the move as well, you know, down in the car park area. So, you know, it just goes to show you the nature of the actual, the degree of the wind quality, you know. So that's it. So our situation at the moment is that the swimming pool is closed, but the athletic centre is still going. But we're waiting for the insurance people. But we're kind of fingers crossed, you know. There's no internal damage, and it's just limited to the roof, really.
Patsy, the concern was at the time if any of this material would injure or what have you. So once we've got past that, we can patch the building back up. Thankfully, no one was injured through the process of the loss of some of this external sheeting.
Exactly. That's it. And somebody said on numerous occasions, there's nobody hurt. So that's really the underlining thing. Yeah,
critical.
That's it. So the swimming pool, just to repeat for people, the swimming pool is closed today. Just keep watching the Facebook and see regarding. Hopefully we'll get it open up good and quick again. But the other side of the centre is open for normal business.
All right, good stuff. Thanks very much, Patsy. Right. Thanks for the update, Patsy McGonigal there. From the Finn Valley Centre. So that's a bit of good news. Right, we're going to have to take a quick break. Stay with us. We're going to be chatting to Dominic about his experience flying again after these. Okay, Dominic, good morning to you.
Good morning, Craig.
You were flying from Amsterdam. What was your experience?
Craig, yesterday we were flying from Amsterdam to Dublin, and originally our flight time was 5 to 3, leaving Amsterdam. That was delayed then to 4:05. So anyway, we started to board the gate, and we're put on the plane at 3:15. The flight leaves just before 4, I believe. Then when we're going to land on to Dublin, the landing was aborted because obviously the nature of the storm. So we go back into the air. We were then told after within the air 10 minutes, we're told we're going to go to Shannon Airport, which, fair enough, grand. Then another 10, 15 minutes might have passed. Then we were told that the pilot got the wrong information, that the storm is obviously bad there as well. So we're now diverting to Stansted Airport in London. So we head to Stansted Airport. We land at Stansted Airport and we are kept off the runway for about 4 hours on the plane, not allowed off the plane. No fresh air, no water, no food. We were told that we couldn't purchase anything because the water or any of the food they can't sell once the plane is grounded or landed on the airport. So we were kept in the plane for about 4 hours, Greg. Some updates, maybe an hour and a half at a time. Maybe 3 hours might have passed. The pilot comes on board and says, listen, we are now going to refuel and go back to Dublin Airport. Now, the majority of the people on that plane did not want to fly. Like, when we were sitting on off the runway, the plane was literally shaking with the force of the winds.
Mm-hmm.
So the majority of people were even happy to get off the plane, pay for their whole accommodation, wait until today until things settled, and then pay for another flight.
But you weren't allowed to get off.
The majority of people were happy to do that.
Dominic.
What's that, Craig?
You weren't allowed to get off.
We weren't allowed to get off.
Wow.
We're not allowed to get off. No fresh air. Not like there was one or two young kids and everything in the plane. We weren't even told why we weren't allowed off.
Mm.
Like even if we had got a bit of fresh air, food, a bit of water, and then maybe boarded again.
Yeah.
But we weren't even allowed to do that.
And then eventually you did get back on the plane, landed in Dublin, but yeah, that wasn't the end of it. You were still stuck on the plane.
Absolutely. It just seemed to get worse and worse and worse. So we landed just after, I think it was 11:20 in Dublin Airport. Very strangely, as we all know, when we land on an airport, we go to a gate. We land in the airport and we just literally roll off the runway and park up away from Terminal 1 or Terminal 2, just mm-hmm. away from it, very strangely. So we park up. Within 10 minutes, we're told that we're waiting on a tug truck. Which I was like, a tug truck? So apparently they thought the plane was landing and was empty. That's what we were told.
Wow.
And that they're waiting on the tug truck then to take us to one of the gates. That there, from landing 11:20 to eventually getting to a gate and getting off the plane was 1:20.
Unbelievable stuff. And just finally, would it put you off flying, the actual experience?
Absolutely. Like we're regular enough, no travellers, and get on a plane or whatever. That air was the worst I've ever seen. I wouldn't even say incompetency. I don't even know what it was. I really don't know.
All right, Dominic. Listen, terrible story, but glad you're down safe. Thank you very much for coming on to the programme. Right, the European Parliament Petitions Committee has published its draft report on the fact-finding field trip to Donegal, which took place in October. The findings will be discussed at the Petitions Committee in Brussels tomorrow. It contains, the draft report contains 6 recommendations to local, regional and national authorities of Ireland and the European Commission, one of which relates to the defective concrete block redress scheme. Okay, we've a number of guests to join us on this. I'm going to start with Joe Morgan, if that's okay, lead on EU engagement for the defective block campaign. Firstly, the wheels have moved remarkably quick on this. It feels like that to me. Anyway, Joe, but just give us a brief synopsis as how this issue ended up in Europe.
Sure, Greg, and thanks for taking the time to have us on. So, Greg, there's been conversations since Thursday last week in terms of complaints and reports and the Commission and the Parliament. So let me just put that in context and try and line that up for people. So within the EU institutions, we have two major institutions, the Commission and the Parliament. And the Commission are responsible for penning or proposing EU law, whereas the Parliament then adopt them, right, and Member States then implement EU law. So the crucial piece here in terms of our objective is the Commission has the authority, legal authority, to infringe member states if they fail to introduce EU law, right? So they've always been our target. But you can't just rock up to the EU Commission, knock the door and expect it to open and be invited. You need an introduction. And that's where the EU Parliament, and particularly this report, comes into play. So we've been working with the Parliament, and through Luke and his team have been educated and supported in terms of navigating the corridors of the Parliament. And ultimately, the Parliament have now engage their highest level of escalation in terms of what they can do for us in the form of this report. And we're now, I'm actually immediately after this interview, I'm on my way to Brussels. I've been meeting up with Luke. And when that report is being presented to the Commission, we are also going to be presenting a direct complaint from homeowners to the Commission. And the idea there is to keep the report and the complaint in lockstep, because the report itself is an independent, objective opinion on the crisis here in Ireland from an EU institution, and it therefore has a lot of credibility. So we're going to lend or borrow, if you like, some of that credibility for our complaint by making sure that both documents and both records of the crisis are presented to the Commission in lockstep.
Luke McFlanagan, you mentioned, is Midlands North West MEP. Luke, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us. And with the weather and all, we're all a little bit delayed.
All right up there. That was a terrible night.
It was indeed. Luke, so put this into context to us. Like, I mean, this is really, you know, quite a damning indictment of the handling of this crisis here. Can you talk to us about how regular this is, the significance of it, sort of put frame it for us as to what the EU's doing and its commentary on this crisis?
Well, I'll put it in context for myself, and I maybe put it in context for a lot of people in Donegal, the majority who vote against referenda on the European Union. I have to say, when we went into this at first, I would have been a bit sceptical about how far we could go with it. I did say to Joe and Paul and Eileen a bit of expectation management, that who knows how far they'll take it. But I have to say, They pull no punches in this report. They have stated exactly what was stated to them on the mission. When it comes to the grant scheme, they're very, very clear, and this is really important, that it is not good enough. It needs to be beefed up. It needs to take into account people's foundations. It needs to take into account all costs. And what I was a little bit worried about was, because people can be politically partisan, and the chair of the committee is from the EPP group, which is the same group that the government are in. I have to say, when the report was being put together, I was worried that it might be a bit of a whitewash, but it certainly isn't. They're very, very, very clear. They're clear in many areas from the point of view of the impact that it's had on people, from a financial, from a health point of view. They're very, very clear about the fact that the Irish government and the Irish state needs to be proactive rather than reactive in the future. And I'm very happy to see that in there, because I think I said that about 20 times on the mission. And one thing that's really impressed me with this group, and it's a very unselfish thing, and myself and my office had discussed this, one of their biggest goals is that this will never happen again. And that doesn't necessarily help them immediately, but they are seeing that potentially this could happen again, and that they don't want it to ever happen again. So if we follow what's said in this report, and we are proactive rather than reactive, then this will not happen again. Mm. One of the most important things that they say, though, is that we've got to find out why this has happened. We need a national inquiry into it, and we need to find out who is responsible. And while I feel 100% of the money that this costs people should be paid back to them, wherever it comes from, obviously there are taxpayers out there saying, well, who are the people responsible for this? And they have to be followed. And that's one thing I'm pleased about. This report is very clear. The people who are responsible must be followed. But the big thing that comes out of it is that If the Irish government hasn't done what it's meant to do, then infringement procedures can be taken against them. And I know all about this as a turf cutter and as a European citizen. I had it thrown at me for years that we were breaking some law, the Habitats Directive, by cutting turf in certain places. And we were told that Europe will come after us and we've got a cop on, and how me and my turf cutters were going to cost the country a fortune. Well, the shoe is on the other foot now. And this report makes it quite clear. We're not doing something we signed up to do. And if we don't follow through on it, the European Union will come after us.
All right. Eileen Doherty is a homeowner and defective block campaigner, and is with us as well, Eileen. I mean, from what I've seen of it, and it's just been a busy couple of days, it seems to catch pretty much everything. This is not that the homeowners need vindication, but this sort of indicates every single position: the red tape, the foundations, the level of compensation, so on and so forth, Eileen.
Absolutely, Greg. Yeah, I mean, for years we've been saying all of this stuff, and I think particularly over the last year or so, we have been painted as complainers and as if nothing is good enough. So this is a really good, excellent report, which is, as Luke has said, is objective, or as Joe has said, is an objective report. It shows that we're not the only people who are saying that there are major issues here. I mean, it covers so many different things. I mean, just picking out a couple of things, I think particularly maybe recommendation 5 is one of the key ones that I think homeowners will be interested in, which where they talk about the enhanced scheme, not just the original scheme, that the enhanced effective block scheme needs improved, its scope needs widened. In other words, it's not just covering all of the people that are affected, like businesses are excluded, farmers are excluded. You know, other buildings, public buildings are excluded. They talk about the needing to reduce red tape, that the progress is far too slow, which we've been saying as well. And also the fact that there's no involvement from financial institutions. It also talks about the fact that those people who are not in a position to actually avail of the scheme, of which, by the way, Greg, we know there are far, far too many of those. They said that there has to be arrangements put in place to support homeowners who are not in a position to advance because of cost. So there are an awful lot of specifics. Sometimes you get these reports and they're very generic and there's not very much specific information or recommendations in there. There is absolutely, we're delighted with the report. And also they talk about the need to engage the EU, the Commission themselves, going forward. An awful lot of very good stuff. And I think an absolute credit to Joe Morgan and Luke's team, particularly who have driven this for the last few years.
Yeah, and I'm going to introduce Paul Donlop into this as well. But just a word back to you, Luke, in that, you know, this is really a very significant report, but I think it's imperative that, I mean, obviously we're going to discuss it extensively on this programme and on this radio station as we have, but I just also get the feeling this could be another one of those stories that's ignored nationally, and it really does require, I think, the national media to do the role that the national media should be doing, and to highlight, expose this, and to hold ministers and the government to account.
Well, the one thing that I've been saying about this is, like, the report is very clear and people have been saying back to me, how long will it take for something to come out of this? The government can look at this objective report now and they can finally admit that they're not doing what they were meant to do, and they can follow all the recommendations. So today, absolutely everything can change. And as someone who is a proud Irish person, it kind of embarrasses me that we had to go to Europe on it. But now that we have, I think the best thing for our credibility as a country is that we get on ahead of this. We don't wait for a vote. We don't wait for it to go to the European Parliament. We don't, you know, as this happens in many cases, wait till it gets to the steps of the court before something is done. Because the longer it goes on and the longer the lessons aren't learned, the more mental health problems it causes for people, the more trauma it causes for people. And like, look, I have a family and I tell you, I have 3 daughters and they're great. But I tell you, it's damned hard work. And life can be a challenge. But I tell you, when you walk through some of these people's houses, it would... And I think it's why Dolores Montserrat broke through the political wall and didn't care who was in government here. It broke everyone's hearts. And okay, maybe the government will try to ignore it. But I tell you, the government are at the most responsive when the people are going to the polls. And they're going to be going to the polls next June. So the timing is perfect.
Yeah, but you see, this is the point. This is the point. This is the point I'm making, you see, because the PR campaign is already being waged. And this would only be a critical voting matter. I mean, it's fine if people want to change the deck chairs around in Donegal, but this is only becomes a critical voting matter if it's framed by the national press to the people in a certain way. Anyway, that's my hobby horse. I don't expect anyone to agree, but for me, it only becomes an issue when it is framed as such to some extent.
I do agree,
as well.
Greg. Unfortunately, you're right. And in fairness, RTE did cover it. But
no,
I
I'm not slacking them. I'm not slacking them off. But this is a really significant piece of news coming out of Europe.
I'll be the first to slag them off. But
all
anyway.
Right. Okay. Well, sure. We'll do that together later. Come here, Luke. Thanks very much for joining us, and thanks for moving
things
around for us. Okay. So, Paul. I mean, they take into consideration the human element of it, the financial element of it, and the science side of it as well. I don't want to always label you as the science guy, don't get me wrong, but what is it that jumps out for you about this report?
The context of why the petition they were here in the first place, was because the original petitions went across based on the fact that they had a mica problem, okay? So, as we know, the science has been updated. So I was invited down to sort of represent the sort of science community and present details of the latest findings on the research that we've been doing, because we know we don't have solely a mica problem here in Donegal. We know mica has an issue in concrete, but it's not the thing that's causing the destruction of the concrete. So I was brought in to basically update the science to the delegation and let them understand that actually what we have is that we've got really harmful iron sulfide minerals, mainly pyrrhotite, in the aggregates in Donegal, and that is creating a process that we now know is happening called internal sulfate attack, which causes concrete expansion and then concrete disintegration. So it was really important for them to understand that, because there isn't an EU derogation under for mica, but there is for pyrrhotite and for sulfur levels. So a guy was really there sharing the science to let them know that actually they have a stake in this, because actually EU regulations are clearly being broken by quarries and concrete manufacturers across all of Ireland, because, you know, it's not just Donegal. We know we have the same process, internal sulfate attack, happening in Mayo, County Clare, Limerick, because it's all either pyrite or pyrrhotite that's causing the problem.
And listen, there's a bit of praise in the government for this as well. Very ambitious and comprehensive plan, the mica redress scheme, as it's described. So listen, there is a positivity there if you wanted to submit it and say, look, we accept that the EU has said this is an ambitious and comprehensive plan, and we also accept that we need to jig it up a little bit. So it can be spun either which way. I mean, a two-part question before we take a break, and we're going to go to a news bulletin then. What do you think will happen? What do you think should happen, A? B, what do you think will happen off the back of this?
Good questions. Well, I mean, first of all, I mean, the recommendations were clear. You know, there's not that many. It's not like pages and pages of them. There's six or seven of them. So the government should implement those recommendations, because they do reflect what people have been saying about the scheme. It's very lots of red tape. It's hard to get in. It's completely inflexible. There's still not enough grant income there to cover people's costs, you know. And in the mix of all this, people do forget at times in the public that we didn't cause this. I mean, this was caused on us. So, you know, there's a responsibility for government to act on those recommendations, to make the scheme completely fair, completely accessible, and make it work. That's the first thing. What will happen is a very different matter. I mean, all I can go is on the track record of this government at the minute, is that they seem to have been reluctant to do anything without dragged kicking and screaming on this. I think it's really important that the European Union came across here with fresh eyes, not connected to the whole thing at all, with no real understanding of what's happening, and they've come out with a bunch of recommendations that reflect what people are feeling on the ground. So they should really, as what Luke was saying, get ahead of the game and actually just do this and make the scheme work. Everybody wants to get their houses fixed, and everyone's sick of this at this stage.
Okay, I hope I haven't fallen out with Eileen and Joe. They've cleared off, but...
No, you had to get a flight to Brussels and Eileen had an hour meeting.
No, I know that. I know that, Paul. Listen, come here. Thanks very much for that. We'll return to this, but we appreciate the team assembling to give us some initial reaction. Take care of yourself. 0860 25,000 is the WhatsApp and text number. It's been a funny old morning affected by the weather and...